the headlines. Iran's president says a settlement of safeguards issues between Tehran and the UN nuclear agency is one of the conditions for reaching a deal on the JCPOA. Iraqi cleric Muqtada al-Sadr says he is quitting politics and closing his institutions amid political disagreement over the formation of a new government. And a huge relief operation is underway in Pakistan following devastating floods as the death toll from the disaster keeps rising. Hello and welcome. Your world news coming to you live from our headquarters in Tehran. My name is Gisum Shahmadi. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi has reiterated the country's demands in the talks aimed at reviving the 2015 deal known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action.
What have been raised are first, assuring guarantees. Second, the verification of the sanctions removal in an objective and practical manner. Third, the removal of sanctions in a meaningful and sustainable way. And fourth, an end to what I call political accusations regarding safeguard issues.
Raisi said an agreement on the JCPOA revival hinges on the settlement of safeguards issues between Tehran and the International Atomic Energy Agency. Raisi also called the safeguards accusations against Iran baseless and politically motivated. The IAEA recently asked Iran to provide explanations for what it called traces of enriched uranium at some of its undeclared sites. Tehran has urged the agency to abandon such accusations that often come from the Israeli regime. In this presser in Tehran, Ebrahim Raisi also asked to comment on Israel's recent threats that it will not be bound by a JCPOA revival agreement and it will continue to do everything to prevent Iran from attaining nuclear capability. The Iranian president said the regime can never hinder Iran's progress in the nuclear field.
The Zionist regime's threats against Iran have led to nowhere. The assassination of Iran's nuclear scientists was meant to stop Iran's progress in the nuclear field, but we were not stopped. Many acts of sabotage and seditions were aimed at stopping us, but we were not stopped. And no measure by the Zionist regime and the arrogant powers will stop Iran from its right to obtain nuclear energy.
Raisi said Iran will not allow Israel to take any measures against the country if the regime decides to do so. He said Israel has proved that it is too weak to protect itself, even from besieged Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Elsewhere in his remarks, Raisi said there is no plan for him to meet U.S. President Joe Biden when he visits the U.S. next month to attend the U.N. General Assembly. He said such a meeting is of no use to the Iranian government and the nation. We're joined by Mahmoud Sadaghi Tajar, academic and political scientist, to tell us more about the different aspects of what President Ebrahim Raisi mentioned today. Mr. Tajar, thank you for joining us. If you could please tell us what President Ebrahim Raisi exactly meant when he said the revival of the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action will not stop Israeli threats.
Well, I think one thing everybody in the world knows is that it seems that the American policy is designed in Tel Aviv, not in Washington. That's why what they are planning. Every time Americans want to make peace and improve their relation with Iran, the Israelis are deciding otherwise. The beautiful thing is in Iran, the decision is made inside the country, but in America, the decision is made in Israel for Americans. As long as they will not decide independently. Remember with Trump several years ago, we had the agreement, but very unethically, immorally, they broke their agreement, and that's what has happened. So the Iranians, you know, beaten once, they are very careful not to be beaten again. This decision for Iranians to work on science has no limit, and we have to do our best. But as far as the nuclear cases is concerned, we have been always telling that we have no such a decision for BAM or like that. But unfortunately, it seems that the Americans cannot decide without Israeli permission. So that's the problem.
So, Mr. Tajani, President Raisi also mentioned that he is not interested in a meeting with Joe Biden, the U.S. president, stating that it has no use for Iran and the Iranian nation.
Well, probably he has in his mind that several meeting by Trump with the North Koreans that did nothing except some propaganda. As long as the American presidents or the Congress will not, stand for themselves and they want to please Israelis, it will not happen. So Iran is an independent country. It's not under anybody's decision making. So I think what's the use of Photoshop as they want to make some pictures or some news? As long as they are not sincere, that they will consider themselves to be an exceptionalism of Americans and then talking about democracy but breaking all the rules of law, international law, I think we must be very careful because we have trusted Americans several times. If you remember, just a few days ago, we had the anniversary of the American CIA coup d'etat in Iran in 1952, I understand. And then after that, we had several attempts to destroy this country, attack or threaten. As Trump used to say, we have 51 areas in Iran to bombard and this and that. But there is a beautiful Persian poem from Shahnameh, if I'm mistaken. It says, if you want to be free, you must be strong. And that's the policy of Iran. We must be strong without being dangerous, as others are. We have our right for industrial scientific development without going beyond the law. But Americans, Israelis, and others, they always go beyond law. We have to be strong, yet follow the rules. But the Americans always break their rules, so we have no trust in them. So a Photoshop or, should I say, meeting some president who has no power because his decision is changed by Congress, I think is not in our interest. I think President Raisi is right. No use for meeting like that. We just want action, not talks. We don't want pictures. We want action, real deal, and following the international law, not to break their promise as Trump did, unfortunately.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mahmoud Sadaghi Tajar, academic and political scientist. Moving on, in Iraq, cleric Muqtada al-Sadr says that he is quitting politics and closing his institutions, a decision which could further heighten tensions amid months of political deadlock in the country.
Process so as not to be involved with the corrupt politicians, neither in this world nor the hereafter.
Sadr has slammed other Iraqi leaders for not heeding to his calls for reform. He did not elaborate on the closure of his offices, but said that some of his cultural and religious institutions would remain open. We have some breaking news coming in. It says that Iraq's PM has halted the cabinet. The latest today regarding the political developments in Iraq is the fact that the Iraqi cleric Muqtada al-Sadr has quit politics and closed his institutions. While this decision is expected to heighten tensions in Iraq. Of course, Sadr has slammed other Iraqi leaders for not heeding to his calls for reform. Sadr has not elaborated exactly on why he has decided to quit politics and regarding the closure of his offices, but he did say that his cultural and religious institutions will remain open. This announcement has thrown the country into turmoil, with Sadr's supporters storming the Republican Palace in Baghdad. Iraq's Joint Operation Command has imposed a curfew in the Iraqi capital. Iraq's Prime Minister Mustafa al-Qadhimi has also halted cabinet sessions until further notice after pro-Sadr protesters broke into the government headquarters. Sadr supporters have been staging a sit-in outside the Supreme Judicial Council to step up pressure on the body to dissolve parliament. The supporters of Muqtada al-Sadr right now, as we told you, they have gathered outside the Supreme Judicial Council trying to pile on pressure on the Judicial Council to dissolve parliament. Now, a couple of weeks ago, Muqtada al-Sadr has officially asked for the parliament to be dissolved. The Judicial Council had announced back then that it is not within its capacity to dissolve parliament. Now, you can see a large number of Sadr supporters that have gathered in front of the Supreme Judicial Council in order to step up pressure on this body to dissolve parliament. Iraq has been without a government for almost a number of months right now. The last parliamentary election saw an alliance between the Sadr winning, the Sadr movement winning most of the seats, but he failed to form a government. And now he has stated the lack of cooperation in his calls for reforming the country as the reason for closing down his political offices. Iraq has been without a government for quite some time. We'll be bringing you more details regarding the situation in Iraq, and we'll be in touch, of course, with our correspondents and political analysts to discuss how this goes. A third of Pakistan has gone underwater following rain-triggered floods that devastated the whole country last week. Pakistan's Minister for Climate Change says the flooding has created a crisis of, quote, unimaginable proportions. A huge relief operation is currently underway, with the government declaring a national emergency. The National Disaster Management Authority has reported 28 more deaths, pushing the figure to more than 1,006 since June. Last week, historic rains devastated four main provinces, with Baluchistan being the hardest hit.
Rains are still pounding Pakistan, hampering all sorts of communications in key cities and towns in four provinces of the country. Roads, houses, hotels, and buildings, along with other infrastructures, have been washed away by the flood waters. Southwestern Balochistan and northwestern Khyber Pakhtunkhwa provinces are now in the spotlight due to the sheer magnitude of devastation witnessed there in recent days. That's while millions of Pakistanis ravaged by extreme flooding are still awaiting relief in remote rural areas.
As far as government support is concerned, I think they supported only 50%. A lot of complaints from the local communities that there is no support received so far from the government. They are demanding shelters, food items, and a lot of other things.
Across large swaths of Pakistan, houses, schools, roads, and bridges have been destroyed. Floods also left thousands displaced and struggling to find safety along with their livestock.
Floods have taken everything from us, what we left behind with our kids, family, and cattle. We are living under open sky. We are looking for help from the government.
Meanwhile, Shehbaz Sharif has visited the heavily affected areas. He has already appealed to the international community to send aid and relief to help them deal with the devastation.
We are doing our best to help flood-affected people. The 30-year record of monsoon has been broken this year. The situation is demanding that we all should rise above the politics and to help the flood victims to overcome their miseries.
Pakistan is 8th on the Global Climate Risk Index for being one of the most vulnerable countries in the face of extreme weather caused by climate change. The country witnessed more rain than ever recorded this monsoon season.
As floods have caused havoc from north to the south, the government has declared national emergency. With 33 million affected by the floods, authorities struggle to rescue people and provide relief. Nasir Kazmi Noshera, Northwest Pakistan.
The International Atomic Energy Agency chief is leading a delegation to Ukraine to inspect the Russian-controlled nuclear power plant. In a tweet, Rafael Grossi said the IAEA support and assistance mission will arrive in the plant later this week. He called for the protection and safety and security of Europe's largest nuclear power plant. Grossi has for months been asking for permission to visit the site in southeastern Ukraine, warning of a nuclear disaster amid repeated shelling of the plant. Moscow and Kiev have traded blame during a UN Security Council meeting last week. Russia's envoy confirmed that an IAEA mission would visit the site. He said Moscow would extend maximum support possible to resolve all organizational issues. The Kremlin has called on the international community to put pressure on Ukraine to reduce tensions at the plant.
Look, the pressure on Ukraine can help stop shelling at the Zaporizhia nuclear plant and the adjacent territories. Russia is interested in this mission of the IAEA and took part in its preparations. We are open for cooperation and engagement. The possibility of further actions will be discussed on the spot. Everything will depend on details.
Peskov accused Kiev of putting the whole of Europe in danger ahead of a visit by the UN nuclear agency. He also said Moscow was not talking about the possibility of a demilitarized zone at the plant, something that the U.S. has urged it to implement. Ukraine, meanwhile, has called on Russia to leave the plant, saying that it is trying to legitimize its presence. The Ukrainian foreign minister says the IAEA's mission to the plant will be the agency's hardest one to date. Just days ago, Ukraine's president said Europe was one step away from a radiation disaster when the plant was briefly disconnected from the power grid. The nuclear plant was seized by Russian troops shortly after they launched an offensive in Ukraine late in February. It is, however, being operated by Ukrainian staff. And now with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
President Joe Biden has mocked former President Donald Trump for claiming that he secretly declassified all of the classified documents that were recovered by the FBI during the Mar-a-Lago raid. The article you're about to hear has been written by Newsweek journalist Ayla Slisko. The article has been published by Newsweek and is titled Joe Biden Mocks Donald Trump Over Claim He Declassified Everything. President Joe Biden has mocked former President Donald Trump for claiming that he secretly declassified all of the classified documents that were recovered by the FBI during the Mar-a-Lago raid. Joe Biden cracked a smile and appeared to be close to laughing outside of the White House on Friday, 26th of August, after a reporter pointed out that Donald Trump said that he declassified all those documents that are currently the subject of a Department of Justice investigation. President Biden dismissed the question on whether Donald Trump had the power to just declassify them all by mockingly stating that he had just declassified everything in the world, while also insisting that he was not going to comment on the matter. "Well, I just want you to know I've declassified everything in the world," Biden said after grinning. "I'm the president, I can do it all. Come on, declassified everything? I'm not going to comment because I don't know the details. I don't even want to know. I'll let the Justice Department take care of it." When asked if it was ever appropriate for a president to take home classified and top secret documents, Joe Biden said that it depends on the circumstances. He was not asked whether it was appropriate for a president to keep classified documents at home after leaving office. President Biden said that he was taking home his own daily intelligence briefings on Friday, 26th of August, but stipulated that he had a completely secure area that he would be reading it in, while accompanied by a member of the military, and will be returning the document to military personnel just after reading it. Multiple boxes of classified documents, including some marked top secret and some that reportedly may have included nuclear secrets, were recovered during the August 8 raid on Mar-a-Lago. Joe Biden has insisted that he did not know about the raid ahead of time and that he's not involved in the ongoing Department of Justice investigation into whether Donald Trump's taking of official documents broke multiple federal laws, including the Espionage Act. Trump has called the raid a break-in in multiple Truth Social posts and suggested that President Biden was involved in planning the raid and what he called a political witch hunt targeting him. On Friday, 26th of August, the former president expressed outrage over the release of the redacted affidavit that was used to justify the Mar-a-Lago search warrant. Donald Trump had demanded that the full unredacted version of the affidavit be released to the public. The Department of Justice opposed releasing the affidavit over concerns that it could jeopardize an ongoing investigation and the safety of witnesses, including confidential informants in Donald Trump's orbit, at risk. The version that was released on Friday, 26th of August, following an order from Judge Bruce Reinhardt, was heavily redacted and obscured any clues about the identities of the informants. However, experts, including Trump-friendly former attorney Alan Dershowitz, have said that the affidavit likely gives the Department of Justice enough evidence to indict the former president if an indictment is pursued. Donald Trump lashed out at the redactions on Truth Social soon after the affidavit was released, accusing the federal authorities of participating in public relations subterfuge. "Affidavit heavily redacted," Trump wrote. Nothing mentioned on nuclear, a total public relations subterfuge by the FBI and Department of Justice, or our close working relationship regarding document turnover. We gave them much. Judge Bruce Reinhardt should never have allowed the break-in into my home. The affidavit unsealed on Friday by Judge Bruce Reinhardt revealed that national defense information was stored inside boxes in Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago home. The FBI wrote in the 32-page redacted affidavit that includes partial and completely blacked-out pages that there is probable cause and evidence of obstruction in reference to the discovery of 184 classified documents found in 14 of 15 boxes. According to 10 U.S. Code 8720, national defense information refers to defense, industrial, and military emergency energy requirements relative to national safety, welfare, and the economy, relating to foreign, military, or economic actions. Former U.S. Attorney and Deputy Assistant Attorney General Harry Littman tweeted that documents exposing such classified information literally could kill people and reveal sources and methods, putting human intelligence sources at risk, for example. Included in the 184 classified documents were 67 marked as confidential, 92 marked as secret, and 25 marked as top secret. Further, there is probable cause to believe that additional documents that contain classified National Defense Information, or NDI, or that are presidential records subject to record retention requirements, currently remain at the premises in Mar-a-Lago, the affidavit said. There is also probable cause to believe that evidence of obstruction will be found at the premises. There is probable cause to believe that the locations to be searched at the premises contain evidence, contraband, fruits of crime, or other items illegally possessed in violation of various U.S. laws. The affidavit reveals that in 15 boxes at Mar-a-Lago, the FBI discovered newspapers, magazines, printed news articles, photographs, miscellaneous printouts, notes, presidential correspondence, personal and post-presidential records, and a lot of classified records. Of most significant concern was that highly classified records were unfolded, intermixed with other records, and otherwise improperly identified, it said.
علي حبه جنة وسيم النار والجنة وسي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of the Charter of Islamic Governance based on the teachings of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha. And we are focusing currently on the 16th sermon, where Imam Ali alayhi salam is explaining about the truth and the falsehood, and about wilayah, basically the authority. And these are important discussions in any government. You see, because truth and falsehood, they also are very, they're terminologies that are very much mingling with the idea of authority. You see, why does falsehood want to spread? And what is the reason why people who hold on to falsehood want to spread? It's because they want to have some form of authority. And in fact, if they want to spread, they need that authority to be able to spread and continue their authority. So always, for something to exist and continue to exist and thrive, some level of authority is required. Truth in the same way. Truth also is also very much linked with authority. Because for the truth to remain, for people who love the truth to continue their path, they need some level of authority. They need some type of guidance from a higher source to tell them how and when to continue this path of truth. So that authority is necessary. That authority is what we call wilaya. And this is something very important. Some people are in the wilaya of the good people, of the imams, of the prophets. Some are in the wilaya of the shaitan, of the bad people, the evil people. So we need to separate this truth and falsehood very clearly and understand that, so that we are always under the authority of the righteous. When you talk about the idea of wilaya, when you talk about wilaya, we say authority, isn't it? And we discussed about it in the previous segment.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Now, the idea of understanding the truth, of recognizing the truth, of following the truth, is very critical for the right type of authority to remain in a community, in a society. And therefore, wilaya means to very clearly, in clear terms, announce your connection with the truth, with the true path, with reality. First of all, by understanding the truth, and then by following it and announcing your clear stance. Not by being vague and saying that there is a middle path and, you know, we can, you know, still kind of take advantage of the truth and at the same time be in the falsehood. There is nothing like this. When a person plays around, okay, and they take part of the book and they leave part of the book, these people, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in the Quran says, humul kafiruna haqqa. They are the actual disbelievers. So there is no middle path. There is no, for example, trying to compromise with the truth and falsehood at times, you know, to kind of get a leeway in certain desires or certain feelings or certain things that we want. This clear attestation and a clear declaration and following in the path within a person's nafs, first of all, within himself, in his mind, in his heart, and in the society, is something that is really going to put a person in the right form of wilaya. And actually, this was the point where Imam Ali alayhi salam was very worried about. Okay, now, when Imam Ali alayhi salam, was brought to power, he deserved it from first, but then people finally recognized that, you know, he's the best, and they should, what mistakes they had done with regards to the Ahlul Bayt, when so many people came like a flood into his house and they tried to push him here and there and like make him the leader, and you are the person that we need and everything. Suddenly there was a whole, you know, there was a rush towards the truth. There was a massive, a revolutionary feeling and attachment and, you know, inclination towards the truth. But Imam Ali alayhi salam was seeing something beyond this apparent, clamor that was happening. And he was seeing something inside, something within, which was more sinister and subtle.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to IRIB English Radio. We say that Imam Ali alayhi salam was seeing beyond this apparent clamor that was happening. And he was seeing beyond that. He was seeing that these people are apparently showing interest in the path of truth. But it seems like there was something hidden. There was a sinister, deep, and disregard of the truth beyond this apparent layer of inclination towards the truth. And Imam Ali alayhi salam knew that. And the only time when these things became clear is when Imam Ali alayhi salam started to make some firm steps against those people who are after, you know, the glamour of this world and wanted just power and authority under the auspices of Imam Ali alayhi salam's authority. And that is the time when people realize, oh, for example, Talha, for example, Zubair, what their actual intentions were, Muawiyah, some other people who looked very good in the community. But then people realized, Imam Ali alayhi salam also would try his best to guide these people, but unfortunately some people were just not listening. Yes, Imam Ali alayhi salam had a spiritual influence, but if people accept that influence, isn't it? If people are ready, there were big barriers that were stopping people from understanding the truth, from listening to the beautiful statements of Imam Ali alayhi salam. And that is why Imam Ali alayhi salam was emphasizing in the very first sermons that he, before coming to power, is to clearly identify the boundaries of truth and falsehood and to have that awareness so that people are strong enough when the right decisions are taken by Imam Ali alayhi salam and they stick to the true path and not get confused. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
مرشد هو آيات الله من نداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال منه هو في الشدائد منجد والفضل يمنى هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي ربا.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Thank you. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight. Experts are saying an 80% price cap increase will plunge British people into destitution and cause an increase in avoidable deaths without urgent government support. We are prepared for you an article written jointly by Richard Partington, Rowena Mason and Alex Lawson. The piece is titled Rising Energy Bills Put Millions of UK Households at Risk of Winter Catastrophe. Millions of British households are bracing for a winter catastrophe of rising energy bills that experts say will plunge people into destitution and cause an increase in avoidable deaths without urgent government support. After Britain's energy industry regulator confirmed an 80% rise in the consumer price cap from October that will take a typical household's gas and electricity bill to £3,549 a year, there were stark warnings about its potentially devastating effects. Charities said the rise would completely wipe out the incomes of poorest households, leaving millions of people with a threat of bills that they cannot pay or the choice between heating and eating this winter. Highlighting the damage to whole sections of the population, analysts at the Joseph Rowntree Foundation said single parents will be forced to hand over almost two-thirds of their income after housing costs to pay energy bills. They said the poorest single adults would see their finances wiped out by stratospheric energy bills representing 120% of their income after housing costs, leaving many destitute. Condemning inaction by British ministers, the consumer champion Martin Lewis warned lives will be lost this winter. The latest rise announced by Ofgem highlighted once again a power vacuum at the heart of government as ministers await the conclusion of the race to replace Boris Johnson as leader of the Conservative Party. The Conservatives were in disarray over the response to the price cap on Friday, 26th of August, which will mean typical bills will have trebled from a year earlier. Nadeem Zahawi, the Chancellor, suggested people should think about reducing their energy use, but his likely successor, Kwasi Kwarteng, said he was opposed to giving such advice to consumers. Liz Truss, the frontrunner to be Britain's next Prime Minister, also refused to spell out what she would do to help households beyond saying that she would ensure people got the support that they needed, even though Boris Johnson told broadcasters that the next government would plainly have to increase cash handouts. The price cap was raised to £1,277 last October and now stands at just under £2,000 after increases this spring. The Russia-Ukraine conflict further added to a dramatic global increase in wholesale oil and gas prices. Peter Matejic, the chief analyst at the Joseph Rowntree Foundation, said of the October increase, "In all of my years as an analyst, I haven't double-checked a piece of analysis as much as this one, because it is so staggering, it feels incorrect." He said, "It is impossible to think a care worker or a shop assistant will have to scramble to find hundreds more pounds to pay for their heating bills, or that the entirety of someone's income for a whole year will be less than their energy bills." Criticising Liz Truss for failing to come up with a plan to tackle catastrophic energy price rises, consumer champion Martin Lewis told BBC Radio 4's Today programme, "If we do not get further government intervention on top of what was announced last May, then lives will be lost this winter." The announcement comes as households attempt to budget for a tough winter, with inflation already above 10%, driving the soaring cost of food in shops and record petrol prices at the pump. The Bank of England has forecast the latest rise in energy bills this winter will send inflation to a peak above 13%, while some economists forecast it could climb as high as 18% from January. The next cap will be introduced in January. The energy consultancy firm Cornwall Insight on Friday 26th of August raised its forecast for that announcement to £5,387 from a previous prediction of £4,650, and increased its estimate for the April cap to £6,616, up from £5,341. Combined with forecasts for next January, the Resolution Foundation said bills will set to be about £2,277 higher than last year, at £3,749, extra money it said people cannot afford. Torsten Bell, the chief executive of the think tank, said winter energy bills are set to average around £500 a month, while prepayment customers will need to find over £700, more than half of their disposable income, to keep the heating on in January alone. Those costs pose a serious threat to families' physical and financial health. Ofgem said it would not give projections for the January measure because the market remains too volatile, but warned prices could significantly become worse through 2023. The new cap will affect 24 million households, about 85% of the population. That number includes about 4.5 million prepayment meter customers who will pay on average an additional £59 a year. Jonathan Brearley, the chief executive of Ofgem, told Channel 4 News on Friday night, 26th of August, "The regulator had to make difficult trade-offs in setting the new price cap." Jonathan Brearley, the chief executive of Ofgem, said, "It was designed to do one thing, and that was to make sure that unfair profits aren't charged by those companies that buy and sell energy. And right now, those profits in that market are 0%. Jonathan Brearley added, "What it can't do is it can't say, given the cost of the energy, that we can force companies to get from customers less than it costs to buy the energy that they need, because otherwise they simply can't buy the energy for those customers."
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Every night and every day, every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
IRIB English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hussain Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program Hadith of the Day here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we're going to talk about a important hadith which has been narrated from Imam Baqir alayhi salam regarding the etiquettes of greeting and saying salam to people, adabus salam. As you know, Islam has certain waymarks, it has certain important signs, certain very vital and central things which kind of allude to it. These are the essences of Islam, and one of those things is the greeting that Muslims use to greet one another, the famous greeting, Assalamu Alaikum. In this beautiful hadith, Imam Baqir alayhi salam elucidates on the manner in which we should greet people. Specifically, he kind of explains to us to whom we should not say Assalamu Alaikum to. Imam Baqir said, alayhi salam said, do not extend the greeting of peace, the salam. And then he enumerated a number of different people, and then finally he says, and to those who drink alcohol. One of those is people who drink alcohol. It's not good to say salam to them. Nor to chess and dice players, to gamblers, in other words. Nor to effeminate person, an effeminate person. Nor to a poet who slanders chaste women of fornication. A poet who in his poetry accuses chaste women of fornication. And nor to someone performing his prayers. Meaning if someone's performing his prayers, the ritual prayers, the salat, one should not say salam to them. And that is because the person performing prayers cannot return the greeting, for verily, the initiation of the greeting on the part of the greeter is voluntary, whereas returning the greeting is obligatory. In continuation, Imam Baqir alayhi salam says, nor greet the usurer, a person who takes usury and riba from people. Meaning, for example, he loans money out to people, and when he asks for it back, he takes something in an increased amount of money from them. Usury, riba, which is a sin in Islam. It's not good to greet such a person who does this sin. Nor someone who is sitting in the lavatory, sitting in the bathroom. If somebody's using the bathroom, it's not good to say salam to them. Nor someone taking a bath, somebody who's in the bath, taking a shower, right? Or he's in the public bath. It's not good to say salam to them. And nor an outrightly corrupt person who openly commits immoral acts, a fasiq, a transgressor, a person who not only sins, but sins out in the open and is very open about the sins that he commits and the immoral and indecent acts that he commits, such a person, it's not good to say salam to them. Right, so in this hadith, Imam Baqir, as we saw, he elucidates on some of the etiquettes of the salam, which is very central in Islam. And specifically, he tells us of the people it's not good to say salam to. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at the etiquettes of greeting and saying salam in the words of Imam Baqir alayhi salam. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin.